Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, a show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, talking about something that's pretty heavy, pretty intense, almost certainly serious implications for the digital marketing world in general. Good chance for you too, if you're using Facebook ads or any kind of advertising on a Facebook platform or other platforms for that matter. And those are the impacts that are going to be felt when in March or later this spring, Apple rolls out iOS 14.5, I believe, which is going to allow users to opt out of being tracked by apps. So what does this mean? Well, this means that a good chunk of users, very significant portion, nobody knows, of course, how many, are going to say, yeah, I don't want to be tracked. And we're going to lose our ability to have a lot of that really granular data, which makes Facebook ads and ads throughout the digital marketing world so effective and profitable because of the targeting that gives you. And so what does that really mean? Well, today I'm lucky to be joined by Miracle Wanzo, who is one of the co-founders of DiscoveryMarketing.io, an agency that focuses on technical Facebook issues. She's also the in-house Facebook ads expert for e-commerce fuel for our private community. And she's regularly chatting, dealing with Facebook, knows an insane amount about the platform, but also has been talking to some of the team members over at Facebook about what this means. And so we start kind of high level. So if you want to get just the broad strokes, you can stick with us for the first 15, 20 minutes, talk about how this is being implemented, like what actually is being blocked on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad this is for digital marketers. And then we get really into the weeds talking about what does this affect attribution windows, what it means for custom audiences, for geographical targeting, interest targeting, all of this kind of stuff, as well as some potential unintended consequences that this may have. So Miracle is amazingly sharp and knows this field like the back of her hand. So I learned a ton. And it's, even if you're not in the Facebook world, I think this is going to be a big deal. So it's good to know what's about ready to happen and the implications. One quick note before we jump in, Garrett Ackerson, a friend and one of the co-owners and founders of KindredBravely.com, reached out. They're looking for a head of growth over there, and cool company to work for. They've been an ECF member for a long time. They've doubled every year since winning the Shopify Build a Business Contest in 2017. They're number 20 on the Inc. 5000 list for 2018, and they're looking for a head of growth CMO to lead the next phase of the business growth. So sounds interesting. You want to work in a high-paced place with good people? Check them out. KindredBravely.com/careers. All right, let's go ahead and jump into my discussion with Miracle about how ugly it's going to get when Apple rolls this out. Miracle, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I'm excited to talk about Facebook because you obviously, like I mentioned at the top, you're one of the most knowledgeable people about Facebook that I know. You're our in-house, Facebook expert at ECF and just, incredibly knowledgeable on this. I thought we could start talking about a little context for people. And you probably have I'm sure you've been following this over the last couple of years, but can you kind of tee up how we've gotten to this point? Obviously, it's a privacy issue, but I feel like it's a feud that's been building for 2 or 3 years between Apple and Facebook. So yeah, I'd love to hear, if you wouldn't mind for sharing for people, like how it's kind of escalated to this point so people have a context of why we're here.
Absolutely. I think that ever since Facebook and their privacy issues hit peak public awareness, which was, as you know, mostly based around 2016 presidential election and the Cambridge Analytica scandal, in my opinion, they didn't do a great job of really giving context and clarification to what really goes on. And they came out looking maybe deservedly terrible, but sometimes there was a little bit of misunderstanding about how Facebook acquires data and what they do with it. So the public perception that most people have of Facebook is that Facebook steals data and sells data. And they had an opportunity to clean that up a long time ago and just really weren't aggressive about it. So things have progressed. They've had a terrible, terrible reputation, especially among other tech companies, and then got worse and worse with a lot of professionals from many industries feeling like social media platforms did not do enough to curtail terrible content and had a heavy role in amplifying bad content. So when you conflate that with the privacy issue and the negative perception and the general disdain and a need for regulations, you know, you end up in front of the Senate having to testify multiple times about your company. And Apple's privacy initiatives have been there for some time. And this is the writing that has been on the wall for some time regarding all of digital advertising, all of privacy, that we would get to a point where you wouldn't have the ability to access that much information about people without express consent. Last year at WWDC, Apple announced this latest iteration of their privacy updates, which at that time, it seemed to rock the mobile industry more than anything. And when it came out later last year, around December, that it would also impact the mobile web, that is when you saw the other shoe drop and you saw Facebook launch into their advertising / PR campaign to speak out against it. And, you know, they said something that was relatively true, but I don't necessarily know that Facebook was the best messenger for it. And they said that Apple has decided to handle privacy with regards to mobile advertising in such a way that it creates issues for advertisers that may or may not be necessary, but they also did not consult with the rest of the industry when adopting these standards. And there are some things that have not been considered. That's pretty true, but look who's saying it. It's Facebook. And it's like, yeah, you're the company that, you know, you don't have high consumer confidence. You don't have a lot of trust. And people think, well, of course you would say that because you steal and sell data. And meanwhile, this pretty much affects every platform. And Google is kind of, I don't know, I feel like Google sat over to the side and said, I'm going to let those two duke it out. But, you know, it impacts Google too. So that's where we are with, I would say the entire industry has not really had a lot of time to adapt to how this will impact the mobile web. And there's also a lack of clarification to some extent because it gets really, really nuanced. And you have a lot of platforms scrambling to figure out how they can adapt to this change and how that affects mobile advertising moving forward.
I mean, you touched on the intentions behind both companies are kind of, it's kind of weird because like you said, Facebook, they came out with those full page ads like in newspapers and all over the place, you know, positioning themselves as like this defender of small business, which there's a case to be made that, yeah, this is going to impact small business. But like you said, they're a horrible spokesman for it. And on Apple's side, they have always been, you know, these privacy advocates. But you look at their business model and it doesn't really depend on them needing to collect lots of information and targeted advertising, their hardware. They've got kind of their own ecosystem and apps. And so, yes, maybe that's what they truly believe, but it also is convenient that it you know, that's not relying on. So it's weird to try to suss out like, yeah, these are their positions, but how much are they firmly behind them? Probably because of their own business models. We'll link up to a Wall Street Journal podcast. I think it's called The Journal, that was really good talking about some of the background and history too, between like especially Tim Cook and Mark Zuckerberg, which we don't have to get into right now. But I'm curious from your perspective, Miracle, like you've got, you know, you obviously understand the privacy implications, but you are a digital marketer through and through, you understand. So like personally for you, if you're an iPhone user, like, are you going to be opting out of tracking?
No, but I do think that it's fair to allow people the option, but I also, and I wouldn't be the only one to make this criticism, have to state that the way that personalized advertising and the way that all of this works isn't really well understood by consumers. And there's an extent to which consumers believe that they probably believe that it's a lot more invasive and creepy than it actually is. And in doing so, when you have something the way that this will work, when you have a prompt that comes up, of course people will click no because they don't really fully understand it. And this really impacts the ecosystem. You know, you've got news publishers and publishers concerned because the monetization of their content is how they keep it free. You have app developers concerned because, again, the ability to show ads is how they keep a bunch of these apps free. So this is really a huge disruption that maybe if there was a little more consumer education and a different way of handling it, of still empowering the consumer with the choice, but not so much presenting it in such a biased way, you know, you could have a win-win, but this is not a win-win.
Yeah. I mean, unless you are a digital marketing, you know, deep in the weeds and understand it or have some level, who outside of that realm, when they get a pop-up from Apple saying, would you like people to track you that you don't know, is going to say yes? Like, I mean, it's a loaded question. Nobody's going to say yes to that. I was thinking through something the other day, and try to help me think through this if you think it has any validity or if it's just a very poorly thought out argument. So we're going to get into the weeds on how this rolls out on a granular basis. But at a high level, less tracking. A lot of people are going to opt out of tracking, which means ads are going to be less targeted, which means ads are going to be probably less profitable. But because they're less profitable, because Facebook is an auction system, that means that people will bid less on them, will be less demand for them. And if you can buy the ads more cheaply, then that means effectively, you know, it's going to offset the additional ads you'll have to run. And so maybe it's, you know, a counterforce and cost per acquisition stays roughly the same, or at least it gets counterbalanced a little bit, so that, you know, Facebook obviously is going to lose out on that surplus of the profitability. But for small businesses, they may not be hit as much on, you know, it may not hurt as much on the advertising side as much as maybe people fear perhaps because of that whole interplay there. What are your thoughts on that? Is that just total mad talk, or do you think there may be some truth to that?
No, it's a logical discussion, and I'm not quite sure that it'll work that way, and I'll give you two reasons. The first one is industry consensus is that these privacy measures from Apple will render Facebook's audience network, which is where ads can be shown that are served by Facebook, but on, you know, other apps, other websites in their mobile browser or other apps using the Facebook SDK for advertising. And industry consensus is pretty much saying that this demolishes Facebook audience network. But that was a source of inexpensive traffic. Because remember, years ago, we've heard that Facebook reached peak ad load in the Facebook newsfeed, in the Instagram newsfeed. So on one hand, you're kind of getting some disruption to the supply and demand, but on the other hand, you're getting rid of a substantial chunk of inexpensive inventory. So I'm not so sure that that will result in lower ad costs overall. And the other reason I'm not so sure about that is because most advertisers don't expressly bid. They let the platform auto bid. And they just simply, sometimes they may use cost controls. And Facebook's auction is not quite straightforward. It's, for short, the acronym is a VCG, and it's like Vickery Clarke's Greg or something like that. It's a different style of auction. And it's quite interesting. And it balances what the advertiser wants to pay with a prediction of the user's value, that just, you know, how relevant that ad is, how the user is predicted to interact with it, if they're predicted to take the action that the advertiser is optimizing for, whether it's a purchase or engagement or video view. So because it balances both, it's not always a direct relationship between the actual bid on a CPM basis and the actual price that they pay. So you can pay less if your content, if your ads are more relevant and of higher quality, and you can pay more when the inverse is true. And that makes it a little bit harder to have such a direct relationship between supply and demand. What we do see is when, you know, greater market forces impact it, like the pandemic, or when, you know, large advertisers aren't spending big budgets, we see less pressure on CPM, but not so much the relationship between what people actually bid and what they actually pay, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Let's say someone's selling $5 million in products in the United States, e-commerce platform. Let's say 40% of their traffic comes from Facebook ads. Scale of 1 to 10, how painful is that going to be for them?
Yeah, I'd say at least an 8. There's this question mark that we don't know, and maybe we'll get to that deeper, because we know what happens on the tracking side. What we don't know is what happens when Facebook experiences this, what is predicted to be a significant signal loss. We don't know to what extent their machine learning algorithms and their AI will be as capable of finding the right people to serve ads to.
So putting the technical hats on, what exactly is Apple blocking? So, you know, does this just disable the pixel? Like if you load up, you know, any e-commerce website, you look at the view source and in the browser, you can see the Facebook JavaScript app and that, you know, it's a pixel for web traffic. Does it block that at all in Safari, or does it just block it when apps send information directly to Facebook via the API? What exactly is Facebook or Apple preventing if people opt out of being tracked?
Sure. So on one hand, it's helpful to think of it independent of the pixel, because regardless of how the data is acquired, whether it's through a tracking pixel, the conversion API, or a mobile app SDK, the restrictions are treated the same. And initially, when they dropped this at WWDC last year, it was thought to not include the mobile web. And there was either an update or clarification that came around December that stated that this also includes the mobile web in addition to mobile apps. And essentially, the way that it works is when an entity wants to track a user outside of their own platform and they want certain data, they have to present the ATT prompt, the app tracking transparency prompt. And they get a limited amount of characters, essentially about the length of a tweet, to explain why they want to be able to track that user. If the user opts out, then they now are bound by Apple's private click measurement, the PCM, which is a framework for respecting user privacy while providing what Apple considers to be, quote unquote, enough data to still measure the efficacy of advertising. Now, this is where the advertising industry doesn't feel that that's quite the case. And there's been a lot of pushback more publicly from Facebook, but not just from Facebook, just most publicly from Facebook. And so the way that these restrictions work is it limits what you can track about a user. It limits the number of actions that user takes that you can track. And it also requires the ad platform to delay and aggregate reporting. And that's incredibly important because there are all these nuanced things in it about, you know, how cookies and the expiration of cookies and all of these other things that come into place. But what will have the biggest impact are the restrictions on what's trackable, the number of events that are trackable, and the delayed and aggregated reporting.
So is it, from a developer standpoint, is Apple actually blocking? I think I know the answer to this, but is Apple not technically blocking, i.e. through a firewall or inability to reach out via certain ports, but they're more so saying, like, here's the terms you have to abide by. It's our terms of service. And if you don't and we catch you, we'll ban you from the system. Is it more the latter versus the former?
It's a little bit different. What they're saying is if someone opts out of tracking, you have to use the SK ad network. So you have to use this framework for sending the data back if you want to be compliant with our app store. So it's not a block per se. It's a different set of technology for measurement and reporting that you need to use if a user opts out of tracking.
Got it. So let's dive into, you know, four or five of the actual discrete things that may be affected. One you already touched on. Let's talk about, and let's assume for maybe the sake of all this discussion that we're talking through people that opt out of tracking. So not across the board, but if somebody opts out of tracking, how does this affect this? Attribution windows and campaign tracking. Can you talk a little bit about that? And you mentioned the delayed attribution and conversion data, which I'm sure is going to wreak havoc. I would guess wreak havoc with that.
Yeah. There are different sets of parameters for mobile ad campaigns versus the mobile web campaign. So we'll just focus on the mobile web. Facebook has created its own. So on Apple's side, this is called PCM. On Facebook's side, they have created aggregated events measurement, AEM, which is their way of saying, okay, PCM has all of these restrictions, but they've left out, you know, the accommodation for some nuance. So we have created AEM in response. And AEM is compliant with PCM, but tries to resolve some of the issues that maybe weren't necessarily resolved by PCM. Because again, if you listen to Facebook tell it, every time they talk about it, they're going to talk about the fact that Apple did this without a lot of industry input, blah, 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 blah. And so here's what Facebook has done. One is the 7-day attribution window. And part of the reason that Facebook did that was so that they would have one standard across their ecosystem, and they wouldn't have this situation of having one set of attribution timelines for people who opted out on an iOS device and something else for everyone else. So they migrated their entire standard to a 7-day attribution window. When you look at someone who chooses to opt out, aggregated events measurement gives the advertiser the ability to select up to 8 events, only 4 if they're using value optimization, which is where you're passing back data about the transaction value so that you can try to optimize for people who'll spend more money. And you get to rank those events in order of importance, from your most important to your least important event. Now, there's a little bit of nuance here because initially Apple was only allowing, I believe, 8 events. And then they, on February 1st, they modified that to 16. But Facebook has not yet stated if they plan to modify AEM to accommodate more events in response to Apple allowing more.
And so Miracle, typically for you. Quick question here. When you talk about events, so purchase, add to cart, view a page, these kind of things. And so these are the kind of things that you can't have as much as you used to. You have to narrow down what are the priority ones. And then are you also having less visibility into the time frame that you can determine when that happened also is more ambiguous. It's a larger time window. Is that fair for a limited number of events?
Okay. So you can still send the events. You just will only be able to optimize your campaigns towards 8 or 4. So there's a difference between event tracking and event optimization. Typically in an e-commerce store, you're sending a lot of events. You're sending a page view, product page view, which is called a view content. You may send lead events, subscribe events, and then you have all of your transactional, you know, add to cart, initiate checkout, complete purchase events. You can still send those events for tracking purposes, but for optimization, which is basically you have a campaign and the goal is to get as many of event X, you will be limited to across the board. This is not like a moving goalpost where one time you can set, you know, these 4 events in order of priority, and then 2 weeks later, you're going to change it to something else. This is something you want to keep pretty stable and consistent because modifying those events has tremendous implications. So for a lot of e-commerce stores, the only time when they really get into that being disruptive is if they were using a lot of custom conversions, which you do find, because now you'll have to choose. You won't have the ability to do that as freely as before. You'll choose, because most will use value optimization, you will choose your top 4 events, and they will most likely remain relatively stable. And so if an iOS user opts out, they go to your site, they take action, you only get reporting of the highest ranked event that occurred, and it is delayed. There's some nuance to the delay, but it's a minimum of 24 hours, and it can be 48 to 72 hours depending. And that's a nuanced differentiation that I don't quite understand the technicalities of. But bottom line, you won't be able to see that data until a minimum of 24 hours have passed. And it's also not the case that you will see it exactly 24 hours later. So it's not like what happens Monday, you will see Tuesday. You will be able to begin to see Tuesday, but you may see it as late as Wednesday, because that's part of the delay in aggregation protocol. And from an e-commerce perspective, like if someone is purchasing and they make a purchase, you will not see all the intermediary events. So you won't see the add to cart and the initiate checkout. It will impact how you view your reporting, because you'll have spots where data is missing or delayed, and you won't necessarily know which events are delayed and for how long in terms of the reporting. Does that really clarify it for you?
Yeah, no, it does. And so in terms of like real world implications for people, does it just mean potentially that, like one example, and again, I know I don't know Facebook anywhere near you do, but just thinking off the top of my head, like if you do have delayed attribution, maybe you're running ads to people who have already purchased for an additional day or two longer than you have to, wasting money that way. What are some of the other implications in terms of how it's going to hurt performance or hurt profitability for store owners based on everything you said about kind of the attribution windows and the events that you can't track as well?
So you brought up an interesting thing that I don't think we would have covered because I wouldn't have thought to bring it up. And I don't think you're even aware that you brought up something really important. You said you could potentially run ads to people who have already purchased. So this is really interesting because there's a difference between when the event happened and was received and when it can be reported. But there's a more important thing at play with that statement. If someone opts out of an iOS user opts out of the tracking, you will not be able to add them to a custom audience from your Pixel or the conversion API. So if an Apple user, so you're typically talking about a scenario in which someone wants to run prospecting ads and they want to exclude people who've already purchased, or they want to run ads to people who have added to cart and did not complete a purchase. If that iOS user opts out of tracking, you will not be able to put them in those custom audiences from the data from your Pixel or the conversion API. So that's off the table.
Interesting. Do you have any idea? And my guess is that it's too early to tell. Is Facebook going to be able to let you exclude reaching out to people who have opted out of tracking? Because I mean, depends on how much your ad budget is and the audiences are, but it might make sense to just say, hey, if I don't have data about these people, if I don't know if they've purchased or not, I just don't want to target them because I don't want to waste ad spend, or if they've been to the site and didn't purchase. Do you know if there's any way to exclude people who opt out of tracking?
So there are a whole bunch of nuanced questions that as of yet, Facebook is unable to answer. And part of that is because there's some ambiguity in Apple's PCM. What I do know that we were told is that the advertiser, us, we would not have the ability to query whether an iOS user has opted out. Now, I don't know if Facebook may later roll out a feature that allows them to turn on an option or make something available in the platform that lets you do that. But I know that that is what they told us. So I don't know.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, they want to get together for a beer to connect and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools or agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. what, and you already alluded to this with custom audiences, how does all this impact the ability to create custom audiences based on traffic and visits? And I think you may have already explained it, and then be able to scale up with a lookalike audience. If people opt out, does this pretty much mean that you just can't, you either have less data or you can't do it?
If people, I've been told, and this is really kind of interesting because I'm the kind of person when I ask a question and I get an answer, I'll re-ask the question and word it differently and do it a couple more times just to make sure that I have everything correct. Because this is such a specific issue. And I asked that question 3 separate times and I was told that if an iOS user opts out of tracking, that we will not have the ability to add them to a custom audience. And to the extent, you know, that a lookalike audience is created from that custom audience, yes, it does have an impact. The black box of that is, what does that mean for the lookalike? Don't know. Like, don't know.
That's crazy. And when you're saying, I think it'd be good to tell people, like when you say you're asking questions, can you comment a little bit on who you're asking these questions to? Because you have some great connections, I think, that other people might not, that will help people understand that you're getting some pretty good authoritative answers from the source.
Yeah, so at our agency, Discovery Marketing, we're part of Facebook's Technical Services Program. And that's a program that was initially started to help advertisers that had issues at 3 levels with their pixel or their mobile app SDK or the conversion API, have partner, you know, certified partner resources to help them navigate and fix their issues. So we have support through that program, but that also has enabled our agency to have access to, you know, discrete support from the program as well as solutions engineering. So I'm not getting it from, you know, a Facebook ad rep or rumor or you know, cobbling it together from various sources. Yeah, this is pretty much coming straight from the horse's mouth.
What about creating custom audiences, not necessarily based on, hey, let's take a bunch of people that we've identified through some kind of pixel tracking, put them together and spin up a lookalike that has a lot of the same attributes. But what about creating custom audiences based purely on people's interests within Facebook? I'm guessing this is probably not an issue if you want to say, hey, I want the interest of all the people who follow Shopify, who follow BigCommerce, and also maybe they, you know, they've liked something that NetSuite has done, try to get a sense of, like, you know, that kind of audience. I'm guessing that's probably less at risk because a lot of that data is natively within Facebook's ecosystem. But is that a fair assessment?
So here's the funny thing about that. And just to clear up the nomenclature, that's considered like interest targeting, demographic targeting, or behavioral targeting. And that is a big question mark, because one of the ways that Facebook was able to get so much rich data is because all of these websites had pixels installed, even websites that you wouldn't think would have a Facebook pixel had one. And all of these mobile apps were using their technology to send back data because they wanted to optimize towards these actions and these types of users. And so you're sending back all this data and you're letting this black box machine learning AI figure out how to put the pieces together. And one of the things that's predicted is that a high percentage of iOS users will opt out. You know, everyone's not going to update at the same time, and everyone's not going to opt out at the same time. But there's this big question mark in terms of long-term, the decay over time, what happens to Facebook's ability to aggregate people in those audiences? Does it stay the same? Does it get worse? How good can that machine learning be with only, you know, a percentage of the data that it's accustomed to having? And that's the big question. I think that's where Facebook's biggest challenge lies. And they are expending tremendous resources to try to figure that out, because you're looking at what could potentially be significant signal loss when all of these people opt out and they no longer have this data. On day one, do you still have those audiences? Well, of course you do. But over time, this shifts the ecosystem, and we don't know to what extent they can compensate.
I mean, you're telling me that Facebook doesn't get most of its interest data from people just kind of, you know, following signs on the side of the street that says like our page on Facebook and heading on over there, circa 2016. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What about geographical targeting? You know, if you're targeting ads to certain locations, is there any kind of exception for, like, hey, we're not going to tell you what, you know, what customer number 497321 is doing on the site, but hey, we'll let you know they're in San Francisco or Oakland or wherever it is. Is there any kind of, what are the implications for geographical targeting?
So on the opted out side, you will not be able to see any of those breakdowns. Like right now, if I want to go look at my ad reports, I can break them down by age, gender, I believe DMA, no, state, region. You can break it down by region, country, state within the United States. And a couple of other things. For opted out users, you will not be able to do that. Now on the targeting side, I don't know. That's a question mark. I'd have to ask. It probably follows that if that iOS user has opted out, you probably wouldn't be able to, just logically, just thinking it through, they wouldn't be included in an audience based on some of those demographics, if that's how you set up your targeting.
What is there anything marketers can do to proactively kind of prep or mitigate this at all? Like, should we all be going out and setting up, like saving our campaigns or exporting them or audiences? Or is there anything that we can, try to do to get ahead of this? Or is it just kind of inevitable and best thing you can do is start, adjusting to the new world?
So Facebook has given advertisers, well, and maybe it wasn't enough encouragement, but yeah, historical data, absolutely. Absolutely. This is a great time for advertisers to really export the data that they have, slice and dice it, save it so that they understand what they're going into, even if they need to segment it by device, because you can, and figure out what percentage of their traffic is coming from iOS, because, different advertisers have different levels of traffic coming from iOS. Now, eventually this will happen across the board, but we still have time before that's projected to happen. But for right now, it comes down to having a deeper understanding of what that customer profile looks like, because if you don't know it going into a shift, you may not be able to get the type of data to find out later. So you should. And I think what advertisers can do to prepare depends upon what we're seeing, on the agency side, when we talk to people in the ad tech industry, when we talk to other agency owners, we're seeing a difference, because there are some advertisers who they've been able to do pretty well with Facebook, but they don't know how it works. And not even in the sense of understanding all of this technical nuance, meaning like, on a day-to-day basis, when they're managing their campaigns and things happen, they don't know how to navigate changes, or they don't know how to interpret data to use it to make decisions. And now is the time to learn, because you'll go into a phase where everything will change and the guidance will be murky. And there will be some who will, in the info product space, who will capitalize on that, and they'll play off of people's lack of understanding and maybe a little bit of fear and panic, and they may give them information that's not accurate or not a best practice, because a lot of people feel that Facebook advertising for some time has been an easy button, so to speak, because you rely so heavily on a machine learning algorithm to do the work, and you didn't really have to learn how to interpret results and make modifications and make decisions. Kevin Williams set up a meeting with a friend of his who has been in the mobile app space for some time. And there was a period of time where she wasn't in the mobile app advertising space. And she made a statement. She said, I was out of the industry when the rise of AI-based and machine learning-based advertising became a big thing. So before then, we had to use all of our old school training and techniques to learn how to understand data and interpret data and make decisions. And then you had this rise of machines, so to speak, where they did all of the work. So now you're coming to what may be the tapering off of that ability and having to return to needing to have, foundational understanding of marketing and advertising and learning how to analyze data and make decisions, because the ability to rely on machine learning and AI algorithms may be tapering off. And so absolutely, getting your historical data in place, really starting to learn to understand how to analyze data and make decisions. And if your revenues, are highly, highly dependent upon this platform, or a significant amount of your revenues are dependent upon this platform, there will be some technical changes that you have to make the conversion API is one of them. You'll most likely need to start having your own independent system for tracking your on-site user behavior, because you'll need that insight into what's going on. It will be extremely difficult to adapt to like having that delayed and aggregated data. Are you still with me? I don't know. It went super silent.
I was still here.
Please don't make me say that over.
Just sucking it all up. This is great. Do you think, Miracle, that we're going, a little bit we are, from what you said, to what degree do you think we're going back to old school tracking techniques? Like, you know, if you're running campaigns, maybe using codes, use coupon code and relating those back, media buys, how old school is it going to get?
So the good thing is, I don't think it'll get super old school. Like before we got into the era of the rise of Facebook, you know, you had a lot of advertisers that were used to doing things like having their own software, whether they used a SaaS or they had something self-hosted, but they'd have a tracker, right? Because you didn't necessarily have all this granular insight being reported back to your ad platform, and you needed to know what was happening at each step of the way. And so we're kind of going back to that, but that's not really old school. That's just, you know, some people still do it, but it just was the norm just a few years ago. Coupon codes, obviously, advertisers will use things like that. There will be an increased importance on trying to get the visitor to self-identify as early as possible, like join an email list, join an SMS list, so that you're able to capture that data. Because remember, through the pixel, through the API, if they're opting out, you can't put them in a custom audience. So it'll be so much more important to have your own contact, your own tracking, you know, a lot of things that we were able to advertise for so long without having to worry about doing because we relied so heavily on ad platform. So it's just really a return to that type of form into advertisers who want to continue to spend a significant amount on the platform and drive an important, substantial amount of their revenue from these platforms to just put other systems in place.
You mentioned Google, or at least I think you alluded to it, that it was, you know, indirectly that this was coming across the board. Obviously, a lot of these same issues Google's going to have to deal with too. Do you think Google's going to, on the Android side of things, is going to follow suit and do something similar in the next year or two, if you had to bet?
Oh, Google's already working on it. So there's been a lot of conversation about why Google isn't speaking up as much as Facebook. And there's been a debate recently. There's a really great website and podcast called Mobile Dev Memo from Eric Suford. And that guy is so on it. And part of the reason that Google has not been at the forefront is because Google made a statement that they weren't going to collect the mobile IDFA, the device identifier, and therefore wouldn't have to show the ATT prompt. So they wouldn't have to present people with the option to opt out. Now, there's been a lot of debate as whether or not Google's ecosystem still works about that without that. But Google is working on something, and they have all of these acronyms. I won't even go into them because there are so many. But Google has to come up with something as well, right? Because they need to kind of match Apple with regards to privacy. This has been accelerated for them because these types of privacy initiatives were on the roadmap for a long time, but this has accelerated it. But Google is in a different position because they make devices, they make mobile browsers, and they have an ad network. So they have to figure out a way to make all of these things play nice and still, you know, match Apple on the privacy forefront. But because Google does have an ad platform, they are consulting with the industry and working with the industry to try to come up with different methodologies for respecting user privacy and still trying to allow targeted advertising. Like one of the initiatives they came up with, it's FLOX, it's Federated Learning of Cohorts. So it's a way of aggregating people into something similar to interest-based groups, but not precisely identifying people or devices. So Google is working on it, and they do have to deal with the same issues that everyone else does. They just have they're just in a different position.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if this actually ends up being a boon for Google, given that, you know, Google and Facebook are head-to-head competitors on the ad front. If you've got more data and you can be more profitable, then people are going to spend more with you, of course, and it helps the company. I wonder, though, too, like I think there's a narrative out there that people love privacy and privacy is super important, but I'll speak for Americans, at least only group I can speak for. But if you look at our actions, just throwing, you know, Alexa and Echoes in our homes when the Cambridge Analytica stuff all broke, like there was a little bit of, there's definitely, you know, there are hearings and things like that, but it seems like people have, it seems like people, all things equal, would like to have more privacy, but when push comes to shove, like they really don't get that worked up about all the, you know, all the data that people have about them. And there's a kind of a, they don't seem as concerned as you would expect if privacy was a top issue. So do you think there's a chance that Google can maybe keep a lot of this stuff, maybe pay lip service a little bit to, oh, we're doing a few things for privacy because they feel like they have to from a PR standpoint for Apple, but really be able to keep, let's say, 70, 80, 85% of the tracking that Facebook is going to get hosed on and become just a much superior network in the next couple of years to advertise on, given that advantage?
So that's interesting because I do agree with you. I think that people aren't as concerned about privacy as they are with the feeling of being exploited over something that should have been private. And I think those are two totally different things, and that reflects, you know, consumers' perception of their data usage. I don't know the answer to that in terms of Google. Facebook has been able to do something on a technical level that before we didn't have an ad platform that had that capability. And that was that, you know, small or large, you had access to the same interface. You could spin up an ad, and they had a really sophisticated model that could find customers. That's not that easy to do on Google. And even Google's own ability to optimize for conversion seems to need more events than Facebook does. So it seems like they've taken two totally different approaches to accomplishing the same end result, and they've had drastically different results for the advertisers. I don't know to what extent them having the ability to set a standard on their devices, their operating system, and their platforms, I don't know to what extent it might advantage them as an ad network. But that's a solid argument to make.
Miracle covered a ton of stuff here, of course, and you're not going to be able to, you know, unless you've got some kind of amazing magical powers, forecast all of these. But any unintended consequences that we'll see in the digital marketing world as a result of all this that you could maybe speculate on?
Yes, and I think it's a big one, and that's why I'm excited to talk about it, because I don't think a lot of people know about this. So we're going to go back, and we're going to talk about PCM. And PCM says you can track 8 events, or 16, right? And Facebook says, okay, well, we're going to meet that, but 4 slots are taken if you use value optimization. So this question came up in the technical side because that's on a domain, on a top level domain basis. So sites that are running subdomains for different countries, that was the example that Facebook gave. If you're running subdomains for websites for specific countries, they all have to operate on the same basis. You only have 4 events across the board. So a question was asked in a technical group, well, what about sites that run multiple pixels? And the response was, well, you have these events per domain, no matter how many pixels you're using. So I had this long back and forth with solutions engineering with, okay, but what about websites like Etsy or Indiegogo, where individual advertisers can insert a Facebook pixel so that they can run campaigns specific to their products. And we're going back and forth and back and forth because the reality is that doesn't work under PCM. So I don't know how those platforms will resolve for it because, again, remember, if we're talking about like Etsy or Indiegogo, under Apple's private click measurement, if someone opts out, they only get 16 events total. So individual advertisers and individual pixels, there's no solution for that unless something changes. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize, quote unquote, breaks with this.
So showing my ignorance here, but on a platform like Etsy, I haven't used Etsy before, but those individual sellers, they can link up for their little storefront on the Etsy platform, their own Facebook code to track all the stuff going to them. And it's kind of set up in a way where it's almost like their own mini website, even though it's on Etsy. They're not going to be able to do that at all on Etsy or any big domain that has lots of pixels. I don't know, you think about Adobe, even though they're not lots of sellers, I'm sure they have lots of little subdomains and corners with all their products. Like, they're going to be potentially subject to all the same limitations with those limited number of events that a single seller like Kip Undies would be.
Well, not only that. So, and again, we're talking about people who opt out of tracking and what you can get with private click measurement. It just doesn't work anymore. Because the reason those platforms allowed individual sellers to input their Facebook pixel was so that they can run ads and optimize conversions. So when someone opts out, there's no space in that protocol to accommodate a platform that functions in that way, because the entire domain only gets 16 events, period. You don't inherit them to your individual pixel.
Well, Miracle, fascinating discussion. Thank you for all the super deep insights. Talk a little bit, if you would, about two things. One, you have hipundies.com, which is an e-commerce store that you own and run, as well as discoverymarketing.io, which is a Facebook agency. Folks, obviously, if they've been listening, know that you know your stuff. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, both of those, and especially on the discovery marketing side, if you are working with new clients, who is a good fit? And, you know, maybe just tell people about both of those.
Yeah. So on the e-commerce side, I have been selling online for quite some time. I like to refer to myself as an online street vendor, as my daughter has named me on the agency
That's awesome.
Side. I know, right? I love it. We started, me and two other e-commerce field members, Andy Bedell and Kevin Williams, we started this agency in 2019. As of now, we do focus on technical services. Andy doesn't want any more campaign management clients. So typically, we work with people who are having technical issues with their advertising. Like, they're having some issues with their pixel or their reporting, their data. They want to move to the conversion API, or like this, they're looking for solutions to navigate this and figure out a best practice and a way to move forward. And it's great because, you know, we all have that e-commerce advertising experience, all of us. And then also understand the technical nuance enough to be able to help store owners or media buyers navigate this new terrain.
Yeah. And one thing we were talking a couple of weeks ago, and I was trying to understand a little bit better what you guys did at Discovery. And you said that you don't do campaign management, you do technical stuff. And I said, what do you mean? Like, help me understand that better. And you walked me through kind of a high level, scenario where there was a Shopify store owner and all of their technical links between Shopify and the Shopify apps and Facebook were just totally messed up. And I didn't even think that was an issue. Like, I thought you wanted Shopify, you dropped in the Facebook tracking code, maybe you drop, you know, and then or your Facebook ID number, which gets sent over the apps, and everything's fine. I mean, how much, what could break? But it sounds like, based on your experience, like a lot of stuff can break, which surprised me.
A lot of stuff can break. And it got to the point, I initially went into it thinking the same thing. Oh, this is not going to be a big deal. People are using Shopify. This will be a piece of cake. And then you get into a store and you go, oh my God, how did this happen? And you're trying to figure out which app created the problem and doing a process of elimination. And it got to the point that people would come to me and say, hey, I'm having this problem with my campaigns. Can you take a look at it? And the first thing I would do was just check the technical side, because it became such an issue that I started thinking, like, I'm not going to spend my time digging through someone's campaign performance before I go check the technical issues first. And you find them. There you go. Here's your problem. It's not even a campaign problem. You have a technical issue, because the issue is sometimes when you have all of these apps working together and then you have a remnant code, because a lot of people look for an app, they install it, didn't work, uninstall it, code left behind. The issue is that sometimes those problems are consistent, but sometimes they're intermittent. And I've seen so many cases of intermittent problems that it's fascinating, because they're very difficult to diagnose because it doesn't happen all the time. And it can be difficult to pinpoint, again, because it's intermittent and sometimes it takes a while to figure out what's triggering it. And what happens from the advertiser is, for them, they see it as our campaign performance is off. And something's wrong with our reporting. The pixel's off. We don't know what it's doing. It may be underreporting, overreporting, double firing. It's all these different things. And yeah, it actually, even when I talk to other technical service providers, it's really common, really common. So yeah, you wouldn't think that that would be an issue. You know, when you have full control over the apps that you put in your store, and you can put a bunch of different apps in there, and sometimes you may not be fully aware of the way that they're impacting your code and your tracking, you can end up with a lot of issues.
Well, Miracle, before we wrap up, are you up for doing a lightning round here to cap off the episode?
Yeah, let's go.
Awesome. Favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
hands down, it's Supermetrics. I don't even have to think about that. And that is something that I talk about all the time. And if I meet someone and they're like, yeah, we already use Supermetrics, I'm like, cool, you're my kind of people. I love it.
So pro tip for anyone wanting to be friends with Miracle, dive into Supermetrics and be able to geek out on that. What is it, just as an aside, what's your favorite thing? Like, for people who haven't heard of Supermetrics, in a nutshell, why do you love it?
Well, Supermetrics is a data connector, and it lets you pull in data from different sources and aggregate them so that you can look at it in Google Sheets or Google Data Studio or whatever. But this is one of the places where you can start stitching together what happens on your ad platforms, what happened in Google Analytics, what happened in Shopify, and get more of a cohesive perspective of what's going on. So I love it.
Very cool. Well, I'll have to try to reach out to them and see if Patrick and I can get a hookup for
community
members. Yeah, we need to do that. Least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
If you haven't already guessed it, it is the Shopify app ecosystem. I hate it. I mean, I get it because I understand the need for it, but oh my God, does it create so many problems? And then sometimes we go into stores that we wouldn't think make the decisions they make, and we're like, why are you installing these apps from random developers? You don't even know who these companies are. Oh, I hate the app ecosystem so much. It's like, you know, when WordPress plugins and everybody have a bunch of plugin mess on the back end. It's the same thing.
I think a lot of people, and myself, I'm probably guilty of this at times as well, like, or have been in the past, of thinking, oh, it's in the Shopify app. It's vetted. It's got to be clean. Like, it's good to go. There's some kind of quality threshold there. But safe to say that the quality of apps in the app store ranges from amazing to horrifically painful train wreck.
And the other thing that happens, because I think it's, and I'm not saying that they're not quality apps and they're not vetted, because I'm sure that they are. But when it comes down to like nuanced things, like people dealing with their advertising performance and tracking, that's not the kind of thing that Shopify would investigate, because that's a third-party entity. Those ad platforms exist out of Shopify. So, you know, you can end up having a lot of problems that you didn't know that you would have. And it's not because someone's nefarious, but it's just got a bunch of cooks in the kitchen.
What's one of your fondest memories from childhood?
Family reunions in Texas, ironically, because now Texas is pretty frozen.
Yeah, would you guys do those every year?
We did. When I was younger, we did them every year, and it was in the summer. So it was dreadful weather, but it was a great, great time for the entire family to get together in sweltering heat and humidity.
Nice. How are you fundamentally misunderstood by your ultimate frenemy, Lars Hundley, in the forums? Anyone in the forums may have come across one of your guys' good-natured banter sessions, but what does he not understand about you?
You know, the funny thing is, like, Lars and I are both in on the joke, and sometimes one of us may say something and then message the other person and wait, like, oh, did I go too far? And then you're sitting there waiting.
I think I've had somebody who joined the forum and like, you guys were in like a little friendly tiff or something, and they wrote me a private message. They're like, did you see this? You might want to talk to these guys. And I'm like, yeah, I think they're fine. They're good. They just,
yeah.
Just wait. You'll see another one of these in a couple of weeks. They're hilarious, by the way. Fun for a lot of people. What was a major seminal moment or period in your life?
I think I might be going through it now. You know, I have like two adult children, technically, and I have one that'll be an adult in a few months. It's a really weird space to be in. This is a big shift for me personally.
Yeah, good, bad, or mixed bag?
I don't know. It's really weird. It's really weird. There's no training manual for this. Like, what do you do when your child like stands right in front of you and says, okay, I'm an adult now, and you have, and then you do the math and you go, huh, yeah, you really, really are. Not just like I just turned 18, but no, like really, it's weird. And you still see them as a baby. So yeah, this is it. I think this is that time of my life.
Interesting. And finally, who's the most interesting person you've met as a part of being a member of the e-commerce field community?
Oh, for sure. I'd say Jake and Lee Cook, for sure. They're the most interesting people I've met. And they totally redeemed you for me, because I'm like, I don't know about this Udarian guy. And then I meet them and I'm like, okay, well, if they think he's okay, then, you know, that's a vote of confidence that I take seriously.
Well, you realize that that was all part of my master plan to try to win you over, and they were on board with it. So Jake and Lee, I owe you guys big time. Thank you. It worked. Miracle, Thank you so much. I can't think of anyone else that would be able to dive into this at the level that you did to kind of unpack it and talk about all the nuance of it and still keep it understandable for folks like myself who aren't as, you know, versed in Facebook as you are. So thank you for that. And also for just everything you do for our community. You're phenomenal. I can't tell you the number of times people I've chatted with them said, hey, Miracle, she helped me with this, or she was willing to chime in on this or give me some insights on this for Facebook. Even apart from just all the stuff you do as an official expert in the community, you're phenomenal. So across the board, thank you. And thank you for coming on to talk about this.
And thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Maybe we can revisit it again in a year or so.
I know, in a year. How did it go?
Was it a dumpster fire or was like the entire warehouse on fire? We can come back and take stock. So wonderful. Well, thanks, Miracle.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week. Again, a big thank you to the team at Klaviyo for making the show possible. The best place to send highly segmented messages via email and SMS to your customers to make more money. You can learn more about them and get started at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also brought to you by the eCommerce Fuel Private Community, a vetted forum and review directory of 1,000+ in the trenches experienced store owners that you can connect with to help grow your business. If you want to learn more about that and apply for membership, you can do that at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.